Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is November the 11th in the year of 2020. Well, I don't have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on. We know. But if you join us on a regular basis, you know the slogan for this show: if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies, design companies and workforce development companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiative for solar projects to bring down the under and unemployment of black men, young black men and women around this country, locally and nationally. Also to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk for the black community locally and nationally, through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. This show is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change, P as in Paul, C as in Cat.com. That's Positive Change, PC.com. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we try to bring you every week news that you can definitely use, but we don't have today a scheduled guest for our show. But we have some very informative information about the Federal Regulatory Commission 2022 Federal Regulatory Commission bill that is being put forth to open up wholesale markets for the renewable energy industry. And I have a organization that we're going to provide the necessary information so that you'll be able to understand clearly from experts. Now, this understanding is called FERC, which is short for Federal Regulatory Commission with CEO Nat Kramer and Managing Director of Advanced Energy, Mr. Jeff Dennis. We're going to be looking at them break this down through a podcast, and I'm going to key up very, very shortly. But I want to sort of set the table so you'll be able to understand that, because I like to make things plain on this platform. Now, understanding the 2222 with Nat Kramer and Jeff Dennis, as I've explained who these gentlemen are, the organizations, the Advanced Energy Economy Group, is an organization, an independent system operator, which is referred to as RTOs and ISOs, to remove barriers to wholesale market participation by aggregated distributed energy resources. This means that DERs, including distributed solar energy storage, energy efficiency, electric vehicles, demand response, and more, will be also to bid into the wholesale energy auxiliary wholesale energy auxiliary services and capacity markets according to their technical capabilities, while holding enormous potential for DER providers and aggregators to enter new markets with new business models. Order 2222 sets out numerous compliance requirements which the RTOs will have to decide how to meet, subject to the federal regulatory's approval. The result of that process will ultimately determine the scale of this market opportunity for advanced energy businesses. This AEE webinar will break down the federal regulatory order and examine the questions that DER developers, utilities, and grid operators will have to grapple with as they put Order 2222 into practice. And they are thrilled to share this with special experts. And your host of this particular podcast you'll be listening to is John Powers. Had a pleasure of speaking with their own CEO, Nat Kramer, and one of their managing directors and general counsel, Jeff Dennis, to discuss the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's Order 2222. Now, we're going to not mess around today. We're going to jump right into this.
Welcome to Experts Only Podcast, sponsored by Clean Capital. You can learn more at cleancapital.com. I'm your host, John Powers. Each week, we explore the intersection of energy, innovation, and finance with leaders across the industry. Thank you so much for joining. Welcome back to Special Experts Only. Today we dive into the new FERC proposed final rule, FERC Order 2222, with the CEO of Advanced Energy Economy, Nat Kramer, and the Managing Director and General Counsel, Jeff Dennis, who has immense experience with FERC. If you're like me, you sort of know what FERC does, but you really don't fully understand all of it, and you really want to dive in to get a better understanding of not just the organization, but what a rule like 2222 will do for the industry, and what, more importantly, the market opportunity is for those that want to be a part of it. For those that aren't aware, FERC 2222 will help usher in the electric grid of the future. It's going to promote competition in electric markets. The idea is it's removing the barriers preventing distributed energy resources from competing on the level playing field with organized capacity, energy, and ancillary service markets. by regional grid operators. So it's a really interesting order that came out in September. The playbooks are being put together right now by the RTOs, and you can have an opportunity to engage. Go to Advanced Energy County's website, AEE.net. There's a lot more there on the order. And also, you can learn from this conversation with Nat and Jeff about how you can get involved, how you can take action. And, you know, if I'm in your seat, I'm really looking at where is the opportunity here? How can we really enhance opportunities for asset owners to aggregate and be part of these markets? So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Nat and Jeff, thanks so much for joining me at Experts Only.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So Nat, you're the CEO of Advanced Energy Economy. You've got a really sort of powerful background in the private sector, also military. For folks that don't know, you're a veteran of Afghanistan, having served in the Special Forces. But, you know, you helped grow or found and grow Sunrun, and then moving into sort of growing and finding Clean Power Finance, which became Spruce. Just quickly, like, what got you excited about moving from that side to Advanced Energy Economy?
What I saw in running Sunrun, Clean Power Finance, and then being chair of the National Solar Industry Association was that we were moving from an industry that were a set of insurgents that we were trying to break into the energy economy, and that we were starting to become a dominant form of new energy, and the biggest new source. And when you switch from being an insurgent to being the dominant new technology that people are investing in, you really have to change how you engage the economy, policymakers, frankly, your customers. And you really have to come to it and say, hey, here's my plan to power an entire economic system. This is how clean technologies can do that. And so I saw a gap, and that gap was that advocacy for our industries was tended to be siloed around specific business models or specific technology types. And they really didn't come to policymakers and say, hey, here's the plan to go to 100% clean. Here's the plan how we're going to electrify transportation. Here's how you can do that for an industrialized economy so that it is safe, is clean, secure, and it's affordable. And nobody really was telling that story in a comprehensive way, except for AEE. And AEE really was going out and bringing that message to decision makers, governors, PUC commissions, FERC, at Capitol Hill, and saying, here's how we actually do this. Here's how all of these different technologies work together. Here is how all of these different business models work together, and here's how we actually execute the energy transformation. So I was attracted to the fundamental business model that AEE was prosecuting. One, and I've been excited to see, you know, while I've got to be here, AEE has some huge fit wins. For example, the Virginia Clean Economy Act.
Right.
So sure. That's a huge market transforming example of the kind of work that I'm describing.
Yeah, having been on the other side of the table when Advanced Energy Economy came in to talk to us at a place like the White House, what I loved about the organization still do is it's not a think tank, it's a do tank, right? It's spending the time really thinking about these issues, thinking about the market transformational piece of it, and then advocating those policies and pushing that forward in the agenda, which is so key. Because there's a lot of folks that think about it, not
right.
Many people that do it. So
that's right.
And just so for folks that are aware, you guys are a membership organization. You can go to AEE.net. Someday you got to buy .org, by the way. Should be a business focus. who are your members? Like, how do people end up joining?
Well, we have basic members who join us for a relatively small amount of money per year. And what they get is they know we're advocating on their behalf. And they get a lot of intelligence that's very granular about how we're – you know, taking those big ideas and transforming policies so we can expand markets for them. And then we have members who will join us and spend more money with us, frankly, who help shape those policies. And so our members are everyone from folks who are involved in developing wind and solar and battery storage, to people who are providing smart grid technologies, to electrifying transportation, to energy efficiency. So it really is the entire technology suite of transitioning our economy from dirty fossil to clean and renewable, and then doing that so we can also electrify transportation. We work at the state level and also at the federal level. We tend to focus on specific markets, and we really are member-driven in the sense that we ask our members to bid on, you know, places where they think policy, we can have the biggest policy impact. So in a lot of ways, we're investors because really policy is effectively real options investing. So
absolutely.
When people join us, we take their capital and we say, what's the optimal portfolio you'd like to, us to pursue? And we go pursue it. And what it's meant, you know, for the time that I've been here is the really that among advocacy organizations, the best track record of opening and expanding markets, you know, clear above 20 gigawatts for renewables, many billions of dollars for storage and electric, electrified transportation, as well as energy efficiency programs nationwide.
Love it. So for the audience, we're going to have a separate conversation with Nat and I about advanced energy economy, the work they're doing sort of post-election, and really, even I know I've been really focused, Nat, on what the next year, 10 years look like for the industry, so we can, you know, get beyond sort of what the growth we've had today, which is about setting the table to really expanding and growing the moving forward. So I'm going to shift to Jeff for a second. Jeff Dennis, the Managing Director and General Counsel. Jeff, you're sort of a nationally recognized leader here in energy law and policy. You haven't always been on the advocacy side, though, right? You served on the private side and actually sort of adjudicated stuff in front of FERC before.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I also spent over 10 years at FERC on a variety of roles, advising a commissioner, director of policy in my most recent stint there as well. Yeah, so a wide variety of experiences at FERC and then in the private sector as well, a couple of great law firms representing clients like AE and others throughout this energy transition.
So I'm going to step back and simplify a lot of this for the audience who may not know this, but just first, for folks that aren't aware, first, what is FERC, and, you know, what are the roles it play sort of in our industry?
Well, so FERC is what we call an independent regulatory authority, and so it is given certain responsibilities by Congress to regulate electricity, natural gas, hydroelectric dams, as well as some smaller things like transportation of oil and propane and products like that. But mainly when we think about FERC, we think about its regulation of wholesale electricity markets, the transmission grid, and as well as regulation of the transportation of natural gas by pipeline. When we call it an independent regulator, what we mean by that is that it is designed by Congress to be part policymaker and part adjudicator. So there are five members. There can be no more than three of any one party. Every year, one of those members' terms expires. So there's always the opportunity for a president to nominate and have confirmed by the Senate a new commissioner. So intended to be somewhat removed from everyday politics and to you know, carry out that regulatory authority in that way.
Yeah, for the audience that don't know, it is truly a regulatory independent organization. When I was at the White House, you could provide ideas, but you could influence FERC. And I think you saw this in this last administration, or the current administration, when they tried to move forward with putting on a premium around coal, for instance, in terms of utilities. It was a major push by the Department of Energy, but the commission stepped back and said, no, this doesn't make sense for the market. And it was a pretty major victory for the industry as a whole. So FERC, I want to get into FERC Order 2222 for a second and the process behind it. But before we do that, let's just talk process for a second. So when an order comes out from the commission, there's been a tremendous amount of legwork done ahead of time, research by probably folks that like yourself when you were sitting there before they come out with this proposed rule. First of all, give a little bit of color on what that lead up looks like, and then what are the next steps beyond a proposed rule before it becomes the law of the land?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, exactly as you teed up there, there's a lot of pre-work that goes into an order like this. And so going all the way back actually to 2014, when I was in the policy office at FERC, I actually led a team that really started looking at this, really focused on distributed storage, actually, mostly.
Right.
And looking at seeing the explosive growth of distributed storage and the potential of its impact going forward on wholesale electricity markets. That team did a lot of outwork within outreach with industry, actually. And then if you fast forward a couple of years, we started seeing entities like Advanced Energy Economy coming to us and suggesting that the commission take the next step and really look at how do wholesale electricity markets that FERC regulates, how do those market rules in those markets present barriers to energy storage and distributed energy technologies more broadly? And those barriers things are often a matter of the fact that these markets were created about 20, 25 years ago with a totally different set of technologies in mind, and a set of technologies that operate, that have technical characteristics and operating characteristics that are a lot different than energy storage, distributed solar, or even utility scale wind and solar and all of these different technologies.
Correct.
And so these aren't kind of what you're thinking about, like politically driven, we're going to just say we don't want wind in our markets or this or that. But it's typically because a market rule was designed around a conventional technology, and it needs to be adjusted to assure that that newer technology can provide the same service on a level playing field.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, it's a clear recognition of the energy transition that's been underway and in a way to sort of play a major role of it. So I do want to, so let's dive into, just quickly, the proposed rule comes out, and then just process for a second here. You know, the industry as a whole has a chance to comment over the next, I think 90 days, 120 days, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then the commission will take those comments and then put a final rule out probably the early part of next year.
So actually, we already have a final rule. Order 2222 is a final rule. Yeah. In 2016, the commission actually initiated this rulemaking, following up on really the suggestion of AEE and some other parties to put out a rulemaking that said, that directed regional transmission organizations and independent system operators, the big grid operators that run the markets for two-thirds of the load in the country. So big markets, big economic opportunity. And what FERC said in that rulemaking was, we propose to direct you to open your markets to participation by energy storage, as well as aggregations of distributed energy resources. And so I put that out for comment. One thing that's important to highlight there, which is hopefully not too in the weeds, but there's two ways that things come before FERC. Either a utility, which can include an RTO or an ISO, files a proposal on its own. FERC, on its own, gathers evidence, determines that these markets may no longer be just and reasonable under the statute,
right,
because of market barriers, inhibiting competition or something like that, and then proposes to take an action. And that's what FERC did here, based on information that
was collected. The net metering effort this summer, that was a proposal with utilities to end net metering.
Exactly, exactly, right. Yeah, and so FERC said, based on our review of the industry, our review of the evidence, we think these markets are not just and reasonable because they're not accommodating participation by these resources. And we propose to change that.
Yeah, excellent. So I do want to get in the weeds here pretty quickly, but before doing that, just to help define for folks what how FERC sees it, distributed energy resource, right? You've got obviously storage is a piece of it, distributed generation, solar, like what else do you sort of continue, would you put into that bucket as a definition?
Well, so FERC in the final rule defines distributed energy resources broadly and in a technology neutral way.
Yeah.
To be anything essentially that sits on the distribution grid or behind a customer meter. In the commissioner's own statements and in a lot of kind of what's inside the rule, you can tell they're very focused on energy storage on the distribution grid behind the meter. I call it distributed energy storage. Certainly rooftop solar, other forms of distributed generation like fuel cells, those kinds of things. They're also very focused on electric vehicles and associated infrastructure. Yeah. So those are the technologies I think the commission has in mind.
I think that's one of the things I wanted to get at. I think the EV space is really fascinating here, where the opportunity sort of using it as a storage mechanism and aggregating that power is really pretty advanced thinking in terms of what the grid could do. So take us through Order 222. You know, what, just I think from a very simple way, like I think you've given sort of a great overview of it. You know, what is sort of the major changes that are coming out of this for the utilities?
So what the order at its most basic level does is it directs the regional transmission organizations and the independent system operators to open their markets to participation by aggregations of distributed energy resources. The commission's order finds that existing market rules don't accommodate the ability of these resources to aggregate together to meet whatever requirements there are to provide wholesale services, whether that's a requirement that you be a minimum size or that you be able to operate for a certain amount of runtime, for example, right? So maybe an individual storage resource or demand response or energy efficiency resource couldn't do that, but when they are combined together, they could.
Right.
So whatever the technical requirements are to provide wholesale energy capacity or ancillary services, this order says allow distributed energy resources to aggregate to do that. And then the order goes into quite a bit of detail about exactly how the RTOs are to go about that. Various eligibility requirements that they need to define in their tariffs, requirements for how all the various actors that are involved in a distributed energy resource aggregation will play together, right? So, admittedly and understandably, distributed energy resource aggregation is a little more complicated than what these markets were designed around, which was a wholesale market operator, a very large conventional generating resource. It's now you've got, you know, a distributed energy resource aggregator, an owner or operator of an individual distributed energy resource, the RTO, the ISO itself, the distribution utility, and state regulators. So there's quite a bit of discussion in the order about how the RTOs need to go about coordinating among those folks as well. But at a high level, those are the key requirements of the order.
So back to process for a second. So the order then tells the RTOs, here's what you need to plan for. And then the next step, they actually have to put up plans over the next certain window, right, so that people know how to execute within it?
That's right. And because this is a relative, obviously this is an area where the RTOs and the ISOs will need to adapt how they comply to their own particular market design. There's a lot of similarities among these markets.
Right.
But they're also quite different in their own ways. And so the RTOs and the ISOs are given 270 days to come back on compliance with plans to actually put this into their FERC-regulated tariffs. So the things that are on file FERC and that actually govern the markets from day to day.
So let's get out of the weeds and out of process for a second and talk about, well, really the market opportunity. Or go ahead if you got to...
Well, no, one more process point that I don't want to leave out because it is really important is the RTOs won't go do that in a vacuum.
Right.
They will work with their stakeholders to develop those plans. And that's a really critical part of this process for anybody who's interested in the market opportunity that this order will ultimately present or any of the other details of the rule. How the RTOs actually comply, develop those compliance plans and the input they take from industry is going to be really important because once those get to FERC, FERC's window for making detailed changes to those becomes more limited. So it's a process point, but it's a really important one.
No, super important. So if I am, you know, I'm an aggregator, right, of storage, or I'm a member of AE, how do I take part in that campaign, like, and help weigh in on, I think, what really the critical formation of this plan?
So we as AEE will be carefully monitoring all of the stakeholder processes and engaging in each of them on priority issues that we determine with our members. So, you know, Nat talked a little bit about our membership structure as well. And for folks who've kind of bought up to that level where they influence our policy, we'll be working directly with them in market in a working group to determine what their priority issues are and then determine the best strategy for getting those in front of RTOs and ISOs. Those processes will play out in various RTO and ISO committees. And so we also have a tool called PowerSuite that we've recently upgraded to allow you to actually track those processes. And that'll be a tool that'll be really important for folks who want to track those processes directly and get engaged in them. But being at the RTO, and of course, in this time, virtually at the RTO through WebEx or whatever their preferred option is going to be really important. And so, you know, one of our focuses at AEE is really facilitating the ability of our industry to participate in those processes because they're resource intensive. They are a bit of a they have their own language and
right.
You know, their own culture, if you will. And so helping companies who might not be long-standing market participants or may even be new to the energy industry because of their investment in distributed energy, helping them unpack all that is one of the key things that we do.
No, I think that's such an important point, and not just unpack it, but then understanding what actions to take, right? Because I feel like for companies like Kuhn Capital is a growing company. We don't have a policy shop, a dedicated policy shop that we can access for FERC regulatory folks to weigh in on this. Like, we would look to an advanced energy economy to, you know, give us marching orders and how we can play a role, whether it be simply slapping a logo on a letter or providing comments. You know, will that quote-unquote campaign be driven? Will you guys be driving that campaign to the different RTOs across the country?
We're going to do everything we can to drive that campaign, right? It's resource intensive, so we're out there looking for more partners to come in and join us. But yeah, that's our mission and our focus. And what we've really focused on in the last couple of years across the board, not just with this issue, is getting our companies more engaged in that stakeholder process on a day-to-day basis. Because the way you influence it is no different than a legislative process.
Right.
You're there, you know, in the old in-person times, you're there every day drinking the coffee and eating the bad pastry and talking about your kid's soccer game on the weekend and all of that. And our industry needs to be in there doing that with the utilities, with the conventional generators, and other traditional stakeholders.
Excellent. So let's before we ask people to sign up and become members to do that, which we will be doing for sure here, Nat, just to give you a heads up. What I get excited about is the market opportunity this means for not just a company like Kuhn Capital, but folks that are aggregating DG and really looking beyond the standard power purchase agreements that we have in place today, because the market is moving in some really interesting places with wind, solar, obviously with storage. The DG energy transformation is underway. Can you give us some color on how you guys view the changing market and what this means?
You're listening to Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We are screaming over Blog Talk Radio. We're broadcasting over Blog Talk Radio, streaming over Facebook, Twitter, and Link. You are listening presently to the podcast produced by American Energy Economy, and you're listening to the experts in this area, and we're going to get right back to that, but we want to make sure that you are following what is being brought to the table by our experts in this area on today's show here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You are listening to Nat Kramer, Managing Director, and the General Counsel, Jeff Dennis of the Advanced Energy Economy Group here in Washington, D.C. So we're going to go right ahead and get back into that, but we needed to take a slight pause from this information that these gentlemen are providing to our listening audience to acknowledge the platform that's bringing this information to you. Once again, here is the Advanced Energy Economy Group.
I might be able to take a little bit of a step here, and I think Jeff can too. You know, when I originally co-founded Sunrun, we called it Sunrun Generation back in 2007, and the vision was we would own this fleet of distributed power generation units that nobody had at that point, and it just didn't exist. We needed to have smart metering that had route density. Everything had route density, so we couldn't even meter things the right way. But the idea was one day we'll be able to take these assets and we'll be able to aggregate them and use them in the wholesale power markets, just like you would use a big central station power generation unit. And I think what we see today is, you know, 2222 basically codifies that you can do that. We see it being done in patchwork ways across the country. This basically opens up the market and says, if you can imagine taking a bunch of small energy assets, whether they're reducing the amount of load you need, or they're providing capacity, or they're providing some other ancillary service,
or they're just aggregation of generation at the right time of day, you can batch them up cost effectively, bid them into the market, and participate alongside, you know, the 2 gigawatt nuclear power station in Palo Verde, for example.
Right.
And so I think that's the beauty of it, is now there's an opening for innovation to happen. There's a clear path for this is what you, how you take your assets into this big market. And I think there's been, you know, historically, it was a vision, and then it became something people could test, and then there were some trial markets, like the market out here in California, and now we're saying it's like you can go into the big market. I think on a large scale, what this is going to do, it's going to position distributed energy to be able to provide more value to the market. The reality is that a lot of value is moving to the customer location.
Right.
And as we electrify transportation, a lot of load is going to move to the customer location. And just to put it in people's perspective, your average 6-pump gas station is going to need as much electricity to fuel that many vehicles as your average factory. So the amount of load density per square foot is going to go way, way up in the energy future. And for us to be able to manage electrified transportation and intermittent clean energy, we've got to have a way to get all of these resources into the market, which creates a lot of innovation. And I think that's the big framing here.
That's a really interesting example, right? So you're saying with the, in the electric vehicle world, the 6-pump station is going to need as much electricity as the warehouse. So I'm going to ask you to put your investor hat back on. And you were looking at opportunities aggregating these. You know, most asset managers don't have the capacity yet to, you know, begin and or the technology solutions in place, right, to aggregate and to take advantage of this. Do you see sort of a development in this, whether it be the STEMs of the world or others that are starting to aggregate in support of asset managers and selling into that market? How do you sort of see that part of the market developing?
Yeah, I think historically what people would say is, well, wow, if one day I could play in the capacity market at BJM, or I was able to dispatch generation at the right time and trade around this asset, well, that's just upside in my financial model that I can imagine. It's just optionality in the terminal value of the investment. Now you can say, look, is there a cost-effective way for me to actually monitor, control, and control that asset? And if I can monitor and control that asset, and I can do it at the standard that the RTO or ISO requires, now I can deliver. And so those are two parts. And the second part is, am I creditworthy to participate in the market?
Right.
Either I've got the balance sheet to do it, or I rent the balance sheet of a creditworthy institution, which is a form of borrowing, so I can basically get a facility. And there are plenty of people out there who will do that for you. And once you have those three things, which is you can monitor it, you can control it, and you've got the credit to actually make sure that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, which is dispatch or you're going to pay, you now can make turn that into an asset. There are, I think, businesses, and you know one of them, that'll be able to say, listen, I can monitor for you and I can give you control. And that's a software and a little bit of commodity hardware, frankly, technology. Matching that with credit, this becomes really an underwriting for investors who really specialize and understand these markets and these assets. In other words, has an asset actually been created? And can I actually, you know, match that to a credit facility? So I think there will be a set of investors who can specialize in this area, and that they'll be able to take, you know, if you think about it, they'll be able to take an equity, you know, a fixed income or a merchant, you know, risk profile on the equity returns around these assets. They'll be able to take a piece of that action.
Yeah, let me ask you that, because I talk a lot, or have been talking a lot about, you know, obviously the movement of the institutional investor into this, into the distributed generation space, or clean energy as a whole. They're just now really getting trickling in the DG space, but that's because they understand what PPAs are, right? So now we're going to add this extra level of complexity and opportunity. What do you think that's going to do to the capital providers? Is it just going to make it sort of a boutique pool of folks that are playing here, or are we going to get the pension funds down the road? Okay. I can understand, like, merchant scares them, right? The idea of merchant.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. As Chinese, I don't get it. So how do we sort of educate them that this is a very valid place to be invested?
Yeah, I think what we're going to find out is that large-scale institutional capital will back specialists who have an improved investment track record,
right,
and really understand the esoteric nature of parts of these markets and understand how to perfect an asset and underwrite and manage that asset. I think that'll accrue to a set of platforms that are already out there. They may be controlled, as you do, you know, controlling a bunch of DGA assets.
Yeah.
They may be in the store, playing the store space. I know there'll be some, you know, one of our members is in the electric transportation space, and they're providing school bus fleets as a service, pay per mile to school districts. So then, you know, the bus doesn't operate for a lot of the day and doesn't operate during the summer. It's a great asset, using it as a grid asset. I think the institutional capital will come into those platforms where there's a manager, as opposed to what we're starting to see in the renewables market, where the institutional capital will do it direct in the projects, or might say, listen, I'm not going to pay a lot of money to a financial manager, like as you see in the, you know, BlackRock, Goldman, Capital Dynamics platforms, where they say, listen, I'll pay you very low fees, go out and put a lot of money into renewable energy projects. I think we're a long way from that moment, but I think we are in this moment that this gives the opening for platforms to be backed.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And then I'm going to ask one more sort of finance-related one, and it's around tax equity, right, where, you know, depending on a Biden administration, if there's a Biden administration, there may be a push to move away from just pure tax credit. It is a chokehold in the distributed generation space.
For sure.
And, you know, this just adds an additional layer. I mean, community solar itself scares a lot of tax equity investors who aren't going there yet, just worried about getting enough subscribers. You know, you put this layer in. So how do we either educate that community on the opportunity here or, you know, put in a policy in place on the tax side to help eliminate that trickle, right? Because I feel like that's holding up so many deals right now, just trying to find the tax equity.
Yeah, John, I appreciate you asking that. You know, earlier this year, I came out and I wrote an opinion piece, and we put forward a piece of policy that said, look, the tax credit should be refundable.
Okay.
And, you know, you should basically be able to safe harbor things that are refundable and carry it forward. And by the way, if you use domestic content, you should be able to get that for even longer. So, like, let's help American workers, let's help American manufacturing, but let's take the constraints off of the tax equity market. And the reality is that 11 cents out of every dollar of tax credit is going to a financier. And there's really not a great reason for it, as you and I know.
Yeah.
I'm probably the person who's done the most tax equity and the most first-time tax equity in the order of billions in creating an industry. And then second, who's willing to say this, because everybody else is getting tax equity and is there to say it. And the truth is, look, you know, a lot of my friends who are doing tax equity are off the market, but guys, you know, You should go back to a world where you were doing three times as much volume as like we did on the 1603 grant program at one third the fees. Having the tax equity market constrained has really gotten in the way of innovation. If it looked more like a lending market against a government refundable receivable, the industry would grow a lot faster. The financial institutions who are in the tax equity business, they're much bigger businesses. They wouldn't be niche portions of the respective financial institutions. You know, I know that would be better for their personal careers. Yeah, it would be a lot better for the broader industry and all the businesses. So, you know, I'm hoping for Biden administration. I don't think we need to go back to 30%, but I think, you know, for the green line renewables, I think if we could be 26% and refundable, you're right, we would unlock capacity that would be able to address all these new segments the industry taking advantage. I'll take too long saying that, but I totally agree.
No. This is part two of our next podcast. We're going to talk very much on this now, because I feel you on this. This is something I've been pushing pretty heavily and advocating for. I do want to go before we end here and go back to FERC 222. And Jeff, if you have a message to the audience on what they need to be doing now over the next 6 months to ensure that this market opportunity is there for the industry? You know, other than listening to the podcast and signing up at AEE to learn more, you know, what do you want them doing?
There's a couple of things. I mean, one we hit on earlier, of course, which is engage in those RTO and ISO stakeholder processes with your associations like AEE, with partners, however you can get in the door, because the RTOs and the ISOs need your input. And in fact, a lot of times what I heard when I first came over to AEE and was working on the side of the industry was they often said to me, we don't hear enough from distributed resource providers. We don't know exactly what they need. So that's always job one for me. I think the second one is working closely.
Just follow up on that. How can they do that? If we are members of CEO or members we need to become members of AEE. Matt, we've talked about that. You know, but how do they if they're not aware, right? And I would say most of the reasons that DG people aren't bringing those messages.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just was listening to a very, very informative and educated podcast. It was hosted by John Powers of the Advanced Energy Economy Group. They're based here in Washington, D.C. You were listening to Nat Kramer, the CEO and the Managing Director and General Counsel, Jeff Dennis, and they discussed the information. Was very, very informative to you, and we are going to take a slight pause for the cause here on Solar Now in the future with this economic impact on Black America. We're going to be looking at some other issues here on the platform of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. As we come right back, we're going to take a slight pause.
I hear someone singing, I can just sing it. I hear someone singing, why don't you sing it? Hold a key in the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan, change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number, because you'll be in our green room and we want to bring you right on into the living room so we can sit down and have a discussion about what you just heard being presented by Advanced Energy Economy, listening to the experts in that arena talking about opening up the wholesale markets as it relates to renewable energy and small power plant developers who want to get in the real game. And AEE is one of the vehicles that you can log on to our website at Positive Change PC, go to our news and events tab, scroll down, you can see the link, click on that, and you'll go right in there to their to this article, and you'll be able to listen to their podcast, get more information about what they're doing. They're doing some very, very exciting things over at Advanced Energy Economy, AEE. Now, we're going to shift gears here on Solar Now in the Future. The American Association of Blacks in Energy is referred to, as many of you who've been following us for a while, you know we've had Mr. Tracy Wood, who's the day-to-day operational managers for the American Association of Blacks in Energy. They are going to be hosting their 2020 Energy Policy Summit. It's going to be held here virtually December 8th. Through the 9th, 2020. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there is a cost if you want to participate in that this particular virtual webinar. You will be able to get that information by logging on to our website here at positivechangepc.com. Now, you can join them for the American Association of Blacks in Energy 2020 Virtual Energy Policy Summit, December the 8th through the 9th, 2020. Since the association's founding, they have taken the lead in informing and educating policymakers on energy issues, including impacts on diverse communities. This year's focus will be on promoting and advancing communities of color through inclusive energy policy. We will begin by hearing from experts about the association's policy priorities. Then we will continue the conversation with various industry experts on climate change, energy infrastructure, and policy, and our CEO and a few other guests. There are a number of issues important to our communities and additional investments in the industry. You can join APE in this discussion as the energy roles in the national economy and our communities at home. You can register, you can log on to my website here over this platform, positivechangepc.com. Click on our news and events tab. You'll be able to scroll down, and you'll be able to click on the agenda. The panelists will include Paula Glover, who is the CEO of AVE. You'll have Ms. Tolliver, Tesla Tolliver, General Manager of Renewable Power for Chevron Pipeline and Power. I've had the privilege of meeting both of these young ladies. They're very, very dynamic young ladies. You have Rick Tagpin, Senior Vice President of Corporate Citizenship of PG&E. He will be participating in this virtual webinar. You'll have Dr. Tony Ransom, Assistant Professor of University of Michigan School of Environment and Sustainability. You'll have Joseph Tackle, author and director of Big Picture Ranch. You'll have Ray Slatler, Policy Director for NY Renews. You will have Zach Hoster, Director of Climate and Energy for the Breakthrough Institute, also be participating in this virtual webinar, along with Trenton Allen, Managing Director and CEO of Sustainable Capital Advisors. You will have Devon Hampton, CEO of Utility API, Deborah Kornman, President and CEO of Greenlining Institute. These are just the list of those participating. Cooper Martin, Director of Sustainability and Solutions, National League of Cities. Sue Coakley, Executive Director for Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnerships. Ed Young, Chief Policy Advisor, Officer for Natural Resources Defense Council for NRDC. Nathaniel Smith, Founder and Chief Equity Officer, Partner of Southern Equity, PSE. Justin Gray, President and CEO of Gray Global Advisors. Odom, Senior Vice President of the National Urban League. Craig Webstone, President and Chief Executive Officer for American Council on Renewable Energy. ACORN, Mindy Liber, CEO and President. You'll have Larry Sherwood, President and CEO of Interstate Renewable Energy Council. Joni Green, Associate Laboratory Director for Mechanical and Thermal Engineering Science and National Renewable Energy Laboratories. Concludes the list of guests that will be on this virtual webinar. Many of these people served in the Department of Energy under Obama's administration, so I guess some of them will be hit up again to go back into working at the Department of Energy. But this will be put on by the American Association of Blacks in Energy. Once again, that date is December 8th and 9th of this year, 2020, and there's a $250 costs associated with this. You'll find that information also on our website. So when you click on our news and events tab, you can open it up and you'll be able to get that information. And the agenda is also provided here on this on our website. So you'll be able to click on the agenda and I guess sort of give you a little idea of some of those things that will be discussed. So that basically will cover that area of discussion here on our platform today, Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact. We just have a few more minutes, but we want to try to provide our listening audience. What we try to do is bring you news that you what can definitely use here on Solar Now in the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Now, you'll find another link here that we want to sort of talk about today that you'll find on our website under our News and Events tab. It'll be entitled Ask Our Experts, the New Legal States. And this is talking about the cannabis industry, ladies and gentlemen, what has come about through this election. What are the implications of Election Day, which was just held, which most of us know, last week in the U.S. for legalizing cannabis markets and the industry? Now, this information was authored by Joseph Adams, Ph.D. It was published 11-9-2020. This is put out by Frontier Data, which we always provide the source and the give credit to those who have authored these articles that we download in our blog, because we're not trying to do anything but bring to you this information. But I think it's very interesting to know about this industry. While a divided country spent the last week wondering about the U.S. presidential election outcome, cannabis came out a clear winner. Throughout all five of the states in the considered for reform measures on their ballots, legal cannabis programs took the day. Voters in each Arizona, Montana, New Jersey voted to approve adult use initiatives. South Dakota voters approved two measures simultaneously legalizing cannabis for both medical and adult use. Finally, Mississippi voters passed a medical cannabis initiative outside of to increase consumers' access to cannabis. The new legal markets are estimated to generate $1.2 billion in revenue by 2022 and help the U.S. overall U.S. markets to surpass the $3.3 billion by the year 2025. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the close of another episode of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. And as you know, I'm your host, Ronald Buffet. And every week we try to bring news that you can definitely use here on this platform. But I also like to let people know that this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which serves as a blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation design companies, installation workforce development companies to address the effects of higher energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, also to utilize black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of young black men locally and nationally, also to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future. With its economic impact on black America, it's also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Talk Show Radio Initiative, which you're listening to. We're broadcasting over the World Wide Web, over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We're streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and Link. And as you know, ladies and gentlemen, we attempt every week to say to our people, please go click on our GoFundMe link on our website, because we urgently need your support for this platform. If you appreciate this information that we bring to you every week over this platform. And until next week, we say, don't meet us here, beat us here. And till next week, we say, go in peace. Hear from over the World Wide Web broadcasting. We hope you've enjoyed this show. And until next week, we say once again, you have a good one, and we'll see you next week here at the same location over your World Wide Web.
Someone singing,
I can choose.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. To decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Thank you.